Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Kamidogu podcast. I am Christopher Veljanovsky, and joining me in the virtual podcasting booth, as always, is the man, the myth, the legend, Toasty.
Toasty!
Before we get started, I wanted to take a quick moment to thank everyone who has supported us on this journey. In fact, we are fast approaching this podcast's one-year anniversary. Kamidogu itself was established in 2005 and became yet another fan site in what was already a plentiful community. Every other month, it seemed like another fan site would appear, and while things certainly have changed over the years, I'm really proud that Kamidogu is still around and one of the last ones standing at that. We couldn't do what we do without you. It's the fans that keep us going. So for those of you who have told a friend or a cousin or a grandma about us, thank you so much for helping to spread the word and keep our dream alive. You are the reason we keep doing what we do, and we're so glad that we can give back to this amazing community. If you're new here, be sure to hit follow or subscribe to join the family, and be sure to check out some of our previous episodes for more great content. Without further ado, Toasty, take it away.
Well said, Chris. It's good to be back, combatants. Today, we have a very special episode. Joined with us is the incredible Dan Southworth, the very same gentleman who portrayed Kenshi in Mortal Kombat Legacy Season 2. Dan has succeeded in a number of projects, not only involved in the acting scene, but has a strong passion towards stunt work and martial arts, even known to do motion capture in video games, some big titles like Star Wars Jedi Fallen Order. Some of you may be familiar with his work as the Quantum Ranger from Power Rangers. He's also very well known to have voiced Virgil in the Devil May Cry series. But jumping back to Mortal Kombat, fans were dying to see a live-action representation of the famous blind swordsman, Kenshi. Dan exceeded with flying colors in regards to doing this character justice. Therefore, it is an absolute joy to be speaking with him today. Without further ado, we will now proceed with this interview. Okay, greetings everyone. It's a pleasure to be here, and Dan, I would like to begin by thanking you for joining us for this episode today.
You're not welcome. very busy.
How dare you.
How dare we do this, Chris? We're terrible people.
Yeah.
To begin, perhaps Dan, you can tell us about the process of retrieving the role of Kenshi for Mortal Kombat Legacy. Also, did you know Kevin Tancheron at all?
Well, I went in my backyard and I dug it up and retrieved it.
That's amazing.
Wow.
One of those lucky things, like those people that find diamonds in their backyard, those lucky bastards. I did not know Kevin Tancheron before I worked. Okay. So I got a phone call. It was a low budget production at the time. It was the time when web series productions were sort of the newer thing. And when I say newer thing, it was, you know, they'd already been sort of in production for at least about a year or 2 years. You know, my recollection of time may be a little bit askew by now. But, I mean, I remember I had just finished producing a web series that we sold to a very small independent platform.
Was that Divergence?
That was Divergence, yeah. And, you know, it was just me and another dude just trying to explore this whole streaming internet new world, right?
Yeah.
And then I got a call, I believe, let's see, where was I when I got that call? 2000. So about 2 years later, I got a call, a year or 2 years later, maybe, I think it was like a year later, I got a call that, hey, would you do this? Would you like to do this web series? It's Mortal Kombat Legacy. And I don't remember how, if I knew, I think I knew who Kevin Tancheron was because of his work on Step Up. And there was another, friend of mine who was trying to get him to direct his movie. So I knew that he was a legitimate director. They told me Warner Brothers was producing. And right away I thought, how can you compete? I can't compete with my little dicky web series against guys who are spending dollars to do web series. What the hell is this? And, you know, I didn't pay any of my actors, so I considered it quite nice that they were offering to pay me well below my scale. They were just offering to pay. So I said I'd do it for the rate that they quoted, only because I was interested in working with the director and working on the show and being part of the canon. Because otherwise, if I was of a purely business-minded approach, I would have turned it down. It was not a lot of money. The reason I emphasize that is because I ended up really enjoying working on the show, and it was a good experience for me. So it's important to note that specifically in an artistic career, money isn't always the motivating factor.
Although absolutely
it can be. So that is how I dug up the bone in the backyard and turned it into something of a nice, pleasurable experience.
Had you played any of the games or had any interest in the franchise before being cast as Kenichi?
Nah.
No?
I played the arcade game. So this is when arcade games were still arcade games. I would go to the store as a kid. I usually played other games, but Mortal Kombat was fun. I mean, you know, by then I had already grown up with my brother and I had a Nintendo, and we were playing Street Fighter. And the animation on Street Fighter was amazing. You know, to me, Mortal Kombat at the time was a cheesy attempt to instill live action people into a video game. And the format I just thought was not as cool, and it was okay. And, you know, but I realized, yeah, if you know the moves, you can enjoy this game and have a lot of fun. But it's one of those things where you have to know the moves, because especially if you're going and you're playing at the arcade and some dude wants to come up and put his quarter on the... Oh. I don't know what that is.
Look out.
You put your quarter or you put in the frame up there, it holds quarters, or you put your quarter on the dash and you're up next, and, you know, next thing you know, some dude's taking all your money. We used to actually... Nintendo, we used to put quarters down, and then as you won those matches, you would collect those quarters, and then we would go and buy some candy and some stuff.
Ah, okay.
We'd have a good time, or save for a car.
Little by little.
Oh, little by little. Yeah, absolutely. Dan, fill us in on the details of the fight scene you had performed with Kim Do, who portrayed Ermac. Did you help choreograph any of this fight? Was it a lengthy process? Any onset injuries?
Usually, no injuries. Usually I, you know, earlier in my career, I was much more involved in the choreography. I think this is one of the first shows where I came along and I did not need to be involved in the creative process of the choreography so much. I mean, I knew a lot about the techniques that they were wanting to emulate. But they were professionals, they were good at what they did, and I was happy to sit back and just approach it from an actor standpoint, work on my character, do the moves they wanted. I mean, always what happens is invariably an actor makes the movements his or her own, whether they're skillful or more oftentimes because they're not very skilled, those movements become their own. And you can tell.
Truth be told.
When they're skillful, when you got skillful actors, the moves flow and they look nice, and you have, you know, some actors who are happy to do it exactly the way you want and very minor changes, like Mark Dacascos, what a beautiful guy to work with. And then you have people that change it all up sometimes because they just don't, and they can't perform it. So that aside, that comes out of having a stunt theater for a while myself. I was happy to come in and do whatever they wanted. I loved working with I'm blanking on his name right now, Kim Do. He was from the same karate school that I originally started my martial arts in, the chain, the West Coast Taekwondo chain. We eventually, our school broke away from that chain, and that was Ernie Reyes, West Coast, you know, who was one of the first in this country to be a younger kid who was getting into the martial arts action world and doing well and had a television show. I don't know if you guys know who Ernie Reyes is. So Kim Do came out of that. He was a very flashy performance. He was a grand champion martial artist as a kid. I remember growing up watching him when he was a little kid. And then when we got the chance to work together, it was a nice little treat. And he turned out to be some of those guys you meet and they turn out to be real jerks. And I shouldn't say
so. Sure.
A lot of them. It goes to your head. You know, I went through a phase where it probably went to my head a little bit. Everybody goes through that. But Kim Do was a great guy to work with. He was really, I enjoyed working with him. We're still
wonderful.
We still keep in touch. Not often. Oh. I will say hello. And I enjoyed working with them.
Tell us a bit about your extensive martial arts training over the years. And what was it like bringing, like, you know, ninjutsu to the screen in Legacy?
Ninjutsu? I didn't see any ninjutsu in there.
No?
Yeah, but we didn't do any ninjutsu in there. it's all under the same umbrella. And kinesthetically, the body can only move a finite amount of ways. So what you find is throughout all the martial arts, moves repeat. So you can call it whatever you want. You know, ultimately, we look for something that's aesthetic for the camera, cinematic for the audience and camera again, and embodies the character. So not all of it's ninjutsu. Some of that was some fake samurai stuff. Some of it was some taekwondo. Some of it was some, what do they call it nowadays? Tricking aspects were photography. Yeah. And my personal background was I was a full contact taekwondo competitor. And then I did point tournaments, some sparring in the point tournaments. By the time I got into tournaments and doing open karate point tournaments, it didn't make sense to me because I was used to hitting hard and full contact. So it was fun. It was more of a game of tag. I competed in self-defense. So that's just a division of competition where you show off how you would employ self-defense techniques against one, two, or three people with or without weapons. And that is very similar to stage choreography. So that was how I ended up being good at putting choreography together because I competed in that for a brief second. When I came to Los Angeles, I started getting more into the boxing, kickboxing. I was always a competitive wrestler for 7 years. I did competitive judo for two. I got into some JKD when I was out here because, you know, Bruce Lee's just, he was cool. And there's some interesting...
Understatement.
Yeah. You know, we can totally have a whole another 3 weeks of podcasts where we talk about the intricacies of martial arts and get into all that stupid conceptual stuff and what works and what doesn't. That, we're just talking about my background right now. And then I got into some Eskrima, colleagues, you know, stuff. Specifically for the knife fighting and because the stick training can apply cinematically to any weapon. So, and then I did Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu for a little bit. So my background is all encompassing, broad.
Yeah.
And I have my own style that has emerged out of that. Things that I prefer to do, things that I prefer not to mess with because they don't work. And that's coupled with real life experiences. You know, when I first came out to pay the rent, I worked as a security guard and a bouncer for 2 years at a club that was pretty rowdy. So I was fighting in the street probably two times a week for 2 years there.
Wow.
You get a chance to really hone what's real and what isn't and learn some things that way. I don't recommend it. It was a good experience for me, but it's not an experience I should go through. And really, let me just interject on that or expand on that I wasn't there to fight people. I was there to try to stop fights.
Of course. Yeah.
Keep things
that clear.
Well, but seriously, because, you know, we have the police show up and if you initiated the fight, you know, you could get fined up to $5,000.
Yeah.
I'm not trying to pay the rent as a kid who just moved to Los Angeles. So there are consequences that you think about that people don't realize. You know, we weren't meathead bouncers, but in the same sense, we had some meathead patrons. So they were mainly drunk, which is another thing to talk about. If you're a bouncer, thing, but if you're beating up drunk people, it's not the same thing as
Oh man. But
who's be aware of how they want to hurt you. And there were plenty of those experiences as well. So I use those as references when I'm choreographing stuff. And mm-hmm. now that I'm not choreographing so much, I use them as references when I'm playing a character.
I'm of the understanding for Legacy that Kevin had allowed you to put some of your own creative input towards Kenshi. For example, it's to my knowledge that you originally made Kenshi sort of do like some finger knitting patterns, which was basically like a meditation techniques that
Fujikuri.
Ninjas use. Sadly, I don't think it made the final cut, but you did say it in a convention before.
Oh, you see, you actually mentioned me at a convention.
are there any other type of things that you can recall improvising to the character?
What's that?
Are there any other improvising? Is there anything else you improvised in the show?
I say that because I always think of my character as such a, you know, compared to the other actors that were in the show that were semi-stars, you know, or stars, you know, I'm surprised that he actually, somebody must have asked him a question about my character and then so he had to answer. Anyway, the Kuchikiri I came up with, I did, you know, I was a serious, I still am a serious actor. Search on how ninja clans came to be, what their history was, how they were, you know, defeated by a samurai warlord. I'm going to pronounce his name wrong. I'm going to say Nobu something, but it starts with an N. I can't remember at the moment. Anyway,
okay.
So then I got into some of their practices and the Kuchikiri, and I thought that's an interesting visual reference that sets him apart as a ninja. And he would be doing that to prepare for battle. So, and this is a realm where there's magic. So why wouldn't his Kuchikiri have some form of magic? So that's, I did that in the scene. I held it way slow. I thought this would be kind of weird to do it up here. This could have worked. You know, if I would know what frame was, maybe I would have raised my hands a little bit higher.
Yeah.
It works because it's still the character being active at something, whether or not the audience sees it. And that's important.
Yep.
So, I mean, I use it again. I've just finished another film and I use the Kuchikiri in that film and they take time. Ah. They take time to show it close up. So
it's love it. I love it.
Called Blade of the 47 Ronin. And I'm the lead villain in it. Shameless plug.
Ooh, fantastic.
But, so, you know, that's how I did it. And your question was, did he allow me to come up with any other things?
Yeah.
I come up with an interesting thing with the sword. When you meditate with the sword to figure out where back is.
Yes, that was brilliant.
Mm-hmm. I researched with a friend of mine and he came up with some, you know, ceremonial stuff with the sword. We came up with it together. His name is Luke.
Ah.
He is, in my opinion, one of the best sword choreographers in the industry that is, unfortunately, a secret to most people, you know. He's very good. He's very good. And he had some very creative input for me that I am incorporated into that character.
Brilliant.
I believe, is it true that you were originally approached to take on a role in season one of Legacy, but you were busy on working on your web series? Is that true?
I don't remember that.
No.
It's possible. It is possible.
Okay.
I just don't remember that. I think it was the same situation. I think it was a low budget web series as I understood it. And I was already working on my low budget web series. So, but I don't remember who said that, they approached me. Maybe you tell me who said that I could remember.
You mentioned it on a certain website. It wasn't an actual video interview.
I mentioned
You said it many years ago. Yeah. You said you were offered a role in season one.
Season one?
Yeah, of Legacy.
Of Legacy, the web series.
Yeah.
I don't remember it. I really don't remember it. I might have been offered it when the coordinator then was...
Larnell?
Yeah. Larnell Stovall reached out to me for something, but I was... Yeah. But I think it was, yes, it was a smaller character. So,
oh,
just like Power Rangers, I just got lucky that eventually I wasn't able to work on the first couple of iterations for whatever reason. And then when the character came around that I was available for, it was perfect. Kenshi was perfect for me. I really enjoyed playing Kenshi.
I understand the time frame and budget for Legacy 2 was very constricted. Did Kevin ever talk to you about some initial concepts or scenes that he originally wanted to film for Kenshi that just ultimately couldn't make the cut?
No, I don't remember having those conversations. We like many productions, especially low budget productions like that, I showed up on set and we got right to work. There was little time to collaborate with Kevin outside of, you know, stealing a moment with him here or there to talk about something that I wanted to do in the scene. And what I liked about him, that he was always open. Like, he had a few moments where he knew exactly what he wanted. And if I was a little bit confused, he would come in and show us exactly what he wanted because he knew what shots he wanted to get. And that had to do with the style in his mind, the editing editorial style and directing form that he wanted, the narrative form that he wanted to tell, right? So that fight when Kenshi takes out those bandits, in his mind was an edited, choppy, sort of jump cutty style that he wanted to go after, a couple of us didn't understand right away. We were trying to make the connection and he was trying to say, no, there doesn't need to be a connection there. So once we understood, then it was fine. But for the most part, as an actor, I can't even remember him ever. Oh, like that progression. He never actually shut down any of my ideas. He was very open and receptive, and that's a mark of a good director, personally.
Certainly.
Half of what they do is in the casting, and then that's not to say that not all good directing doesn't mean you have to get in there and communicate. I think he understood there were elements that he liked, and he knew exactly what was being captured and wasn't, so just didn't bother to argue about stuff if it didn't matter.
Yeah, you guys had 2 weeks to film. You were in Los Angeles, is that correct?
I think we filmed for 2 weeks, yeah.
Yeah.
How did you get along with other cast members on the show? I believe you'd worked previously with Mark Dacascos on a number of other films.
I thought they all sucked, and I never want to see them again.
Uh-oh.
My character was a quiet character. I never had to interact with him, and I was happy for it.
Didn't have to look at anyone either. To be fair,
what's that? Mark Dacascos. I just finished films with him last year, and he's also in Blade of the 47 Ronin. We got a chance to act opposite one. And he's a very, very sweet, sweet gentleman. We run into each other for the same roles. We compete against each other every once in a while for the same roles when we're auditioning. So we know each other very well. We're very friendly with one another. And it was a pleasure working with him on this last film because we got to interact more. And I was sort of the action supervisor. So I was, part of my job was to oversee that he was getting what he needed. But on Legacy Season 2, we hardly had to interact. But I do remember in the camp scene when I was doing the Kuchikiri, he was the only one that seemed to understand what I was doing, and he seemed excited by it. I could see his facial expression. We never talked about it. he was off camera, I could tell that he knew I was trying to put something extra into that character and that I was making an effort. and that was nice. Eric Jacobus, I just worked for him last week. He does a lot of motion capture stuff now. He was great to work with. We met each other on that film, I believe. And I really enjoyed working with him. He's a very, very talented and a great guy. I don't think they utilized his talent enough in that season. And then I knew the girls. I knew the girls from just, you know, we all sort of know of each other. A lot of us knew each other. So we all got along. I think the surprise for me was, well, I mean, I didn't know the guy who played Sub-Zero and Scorpion, but they're very nice guys. They turned out to be very nice guys. I run into them every once in a while. Because in the same circles. But the person that surprised me most was Casper Van Dien. He was really funny. Yeah.
Yes.
He has personality. He is great to work with. He's really funny. I don't think anybody out there has tapped into that yet for him. He has this side of him that is magnetic and electrifying when he's just comfortable and being funny. And, you know, like he could play a character similar to the characters that Bruce Campbell has played, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I don't think anybody's figured that out to use him that way. I think he was amazing. So he was entertaining to work with. It's rare that you're sitting in a scene and you have to remember that you have to engage also and not just be entertained by the guy across from you.
Exactly.
He had that effect. He would sit there and entertain us in the scene. I enjoyed that. I enjoyed that experience. And he was a nice guy.
Yeah. There was a series filmed which some classify as MK Legacy Season 3. However, it was later revealed to be called Generations. Some of the cast from Legacy 2 went to reprise their roles in the show. Carrie Takawa, Casper Van Dien, for example. It was fully filmed, but sadly fell into development hell. Out of curiosity, did you have any affiliation whatsoever with this project?
No, I didn't have a big enough name to be asked back.
Oh, come on, Dad. Yeah, right.
What it is sometimes, you know. Who knows? Maybe they didn't have enough room in the script for the character. Who knows? I mean, obviously it fell into some, you know, there were some issues with it because it fell into development hell. It never got released?
No, it never got released, and it was fully filmed. And they even added the VFX and everything, which is very strange. Sorry?
Who directed it?
Garrett Warren.
Well, development hell. There you go. That's nice. No, that would be his fault. That wouldn't be his fault. I remember now. Garrett Warren was directing it. Garrett Warren was the coordinator on the first movie. Yeah, that's exactly what happened. My name probably wasn't big enough to be asked back. Casper Van Dien and Carrie Tagawa have names, you know. They have big recognizable films that they've been in, and that helps sell a smaller project like that. That's just what I think off the bat. There could be all kinds of other things that I'm not even considering. Like, they didn't even consider writing my role in or writing my character in, you know, or the character.
Yeah, exactly.
Could be that.
Could
Kara Warren took over. I remember Kara Warren was doing that. And then something happened with production, which happens a lot. It happens a lot. Garrett Warren is doing well now. He's second unit directing footage for Avatar. You know, he worked closely.
Wow.
With James Cameron, he's second unit directing a lot of the action on those movies. Garrett Warren is, you know, I laughed and made a joke about him because we know each other.
Yeah, I know. of course.
We're with him several times. He's a funny guy. He's a really funny guy. But yeah, it's too bad that fell apart. That would have been nice for him if it didn't go through development hell. I was sort of out of the scene at that moment and on to other things.
Yeah, that would have been fantastic. I agree. And, I was most curious about, you know, what exactly happened to Kenshi's character after season two, because in Generation specifically, Kenshi's son, Takeda Takahashi, actually plays a big role in that series. So that's why I was just so curious.
Takeda Takahashi, is he kind of a name in Japan?
Oh, well, that's the character's name of your son, Kenshi.
Oh,
and Takahashi Clan, that's where Kenshi originally derived from.
I've forgotten all that stuff. And so do you remember which actor played that character?
Takeda? I want to say Boo Boo Stewart.
Okay, yeah, he's a big name. He's a little bit of a name.
Here we go again.
Upcoming kid. Oh. Very talented, so they wrote my character out, brought in a younger guy that is on the rise. That's all very smart marketing for producing a show, just to get eyeballs on, to get it out there and be seen, to get people interested in it. Who knows what happened with whatever prevented it from going further than that. But that is sort of the business end of it, and it's logical, and it makes sense, and, you know, none of us get upset about that because it's just how it goes. You know, there are films that I've been able to get in on precisely because of that, and other people have lost out on. So it's a balance.
Yeah.
You know? Maybe Garrett just was tired of my ass. Could have been that. Because he knew I'd have just been giving him shit the whole time. Oh, that's not true. We've worked together 2 or 3 times, and it's been pleasant and somewhat professional.
Somewhat. Keyword.
Take a glass eye out and put it in your martini when you drink. It's really funny to watch you almost swallow his eyeball.
Ooh! Oh.
Damn.
Are there any funny moments or fond memories you can recall from filming?
Right there.
Yeah. There we go.
No, I can't say there were any hysterical moments from the filming. We were working hard. We had you know, limited time and a lot of stuff to film. Mm-hmm. There were some interesting moments, but, you know, I mean, like, I couldn't get the contact to fit into my left eye. My left eye doesn't open up as much. It's not as flexible. Got scar tissue in there, so I almost couldn't get the contact into my left eye, but eventually I got the contact in for when Kenshi goes blind. I had to fall on the rocks. Productions were way across the park in Malibu. Nobody had stunt pads. I was on a splinter unit, so I tore up some boxes and rolled them up into some makeshift shin pads, knee pads, and elbow pads, duct taped them to my body, and put the costume on, and they worked just fine. They protected me from the rocks. Just some tricks, a little ingenuity right there, a little MacGyvering on the set. Mm-hmm. Has an interesting moment, but yeah, I can't say there's anything that stood out as an absolute knee-slapping, hilarious good.
Did Casper Van Dien ever do anything that was just way out of it and they didn't include it in the film but stuck with you?
Casper Van Dien himself was very entertaining. He was just really funny, you know. A humorous dude, but that was just him being entertaining, right?
Fair enough.
Yeah.
I
didn't expect him to have that personality. I mean, part of that was just going, whoa, you know, I expected him to be a guy who took himself a little bit too seriously and, you know, wasn't. He was like everybody. He was everybody turned out to be great people. And he was a great guy. Yeah. Funny on top of that. So,
mm-hmm. Dan, I'm a colossal fan of the television show. It's called Mortal Kombat Conquest. I believe you had discussions with Larry Kasanoff himself to possibly play the leading role. Kung Lao, is this true?
Yeah, I was in his office a couple of times auditioning for the role of Kung Lao.
Wow.
Very early on. That was an example of a moment where I had a connection with those guys. I forget how I had known them so well, but I used to frequent them a little bit. I used to come in, drop by their office, say hello. I was very interested in doing the next Mortal Kombat, that's why. And they were interested in me. I was really young. I was kind of a kid then, and I don't think I had enough gravitas for that character for them at the time, and I'd have to say that's what they probably believed, and they were right. So, but they gave me a shot. That was nice.
Yeah.
Nowadays, I could absolutely come in there and do a really good job. Mm-hmm. In terms of satisfying their vision of the character. That's what's doing a good job, being able to connect with the producer's vision of the character. It's not about being a good actor or not. Also, I was young then, just starting out, so quite possibly I was not a great actor also. There's that possibility.
Number of things, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I'm, you know, obviously I'm working a lot now, so I've matured and I've got better. But at the time when I was meeting with those guys, I didn't have anything on my resume. I didn't even think I was a Power Ranger yet. That's how early that was. Did I even finish? No, I don't think I finished Power Rangers. It's possible.
I think it might have been a little before, because Conquest aired in 98 to 99.
That's correct. And I landed the role of the Quantum Ranger in 2000. So
yes, that's right. Yeah.
That's a blast from the past. They had, at the time, purchased the rights to Ninja Scroll. And I don't know if you guys are familiar with that animation, Ninja Scroll, but you should watch it. It's a fantastic animation. And I was after the role of Jubei Kibagami. I really wanted to play that character. So I was, you know, they had the script. They were interviewing my mentor, potentially as a director or second unit director, and I was after that role. I think they never ended up doing anything with it. In fact, I think Threshold Entertainment, right around that time, started to have some financial issues, and they disbanded, you know. So.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so last year's Mortal Kombat movie was wildly popular and really increased the potential for an expanded cinematic universe for the series.
Which one?
So last year's Mortal Kombat movie was super popular.
Oh,
The reboot, yeah. So if given the opportunity, would you be interested in coming back as Kenshi?
I auditioned for Lau in that. Was it Kung Lao?
Oh, really?
What?
No, I auditioned for Scorpion in that. Scorpion is the guy who's the former MMA fighter, right? Right? In that rendition.
Oh, Cole Young.
Cole Young, yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, Cole Young, yeah. I auditioned for that.
Oh, wow.
And a colleague of mine who I know very well, his son ended up getting that role, I believe. Louis Tan? Did Louis Tan get
Cole? Louis Tan.
So that was a clear indication of which direction they were going in terms of
right.
Overall look and youth of the film. I liked that character because he was older. You know, and he had been through the ringer a bit, so.
Yeah, right.
So I was hoping to get in there and do something with that, but not the case. If they wanted to bring Kenshi back, that would be great. They would have to seek me out, or I would probably have to audition for it, you know, so. We'll see. I mean, job opportunity is a job opportunity. It just depends. I might alienate some people by saying this, but action is not my my thrust right now. It's not my objective or goal anymore. I'm done it for 27 years. It's boring to me. I'm tired of it. I do it very well. If it's a good role and I'm required to do action, then I'm happy to do it. Action has opened a lot of doors for me. It's still there. I still train in it. I still keep myself sharp and able to do it, but it's not my focus. So It's entirely possible that I could get on some ridiculous rom-com. Mortal Kombat comes in and I'm like, yeah, nah, I'm not throwing a karate kick this year, buddy. So, I mean, the chances of me getting on a rom-com are slim.
Never say never.
Like I would break out a samurai sword and start slashing people up. It's on the look too, right? But that was just an example. So it just depends. It's all timing and luck in this industry. If I'm available for it, then I'd love to do it. If I'm not available for it, well, then I'm just happy that I'm not available for it because I'm working on something else. You know, it's just the way.
Exactly.
It's very interesting time to be an actor in the industry because now there's an overload of jobs you can work on. So
most definitely.
Moment is always something else around the corner.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
It wasn't like that when I started. It was very difficult because I was Asian. I was expected, when I came into auditions, they were looking for stereotypes. Hmm. Hasn't been until the last 10 years that I've been able to go for more leading type roles or interesting supporting roles because they want to see ambiguous ethnicities. And that's nice.
Yeah. Oh, 100%.
At the same time, it's ultra competitive now.
Dan, do you still keep up to date with any of the current games or track the evolution of Kenshi's character?
No.
No. Okay, let's just say if you were if you were offered the chance to reprise Kenshi, is there anything that you feel at this point that you would bring forward to this character that you think would be beneficial? Anything you think maybe you would experiment with?
It really depends on what the theme of the script is, right? I have to work with that first. I have to figure out. I mean, if it's just a script that's written as simply as power, I can only bring in so much, right? But if there's more meat to grab onto, then yeah, then that may, you know, it depends on the, like I said, the theme, because it could be a film like, what was that last film I watched? That was, can't remember. It's, Snake Eyes. Snake Eyes.
Oh, that was,
they tried to go into a little bit of his story, and those are opportunities when they do that for you to explore some interesting things about the character. I'm not saying it was it. I'm going to refrain from giving my review of the movie, but
okay.
It got a little away from that too, you know. So, and was simplified in a lot of ways. And that happens a lot, and a little hokey in some places. But I thought that there was an opportunity for a really good story there. So, that being said, if I was offered a chance to reprise the story, and there was enough screen time allocated to the character. I mean, I do this anyway. I always try to bring something deeper to the character as much as I can. You know, why is what? I mean, you have to look at why is a man who is blind walking around wielding a sword? That is an incredible feat to have to try to accomplish, and you will get yourself killed doing something like that. So what kind of an individual is this to be in this situation doing this, right? And it's not just, you can't, well, he has magic and he has superpowers. You have to, that's a metaphor. Magic and superpowers are a metaphor for skill, which is time invested, right? At least magic in those terms. You can say something completely different philosophically about what a character like Superman is, but these characters are characters who have cultivated their powers. So you look at that as a metaphor for exactly what I do now, the years that I've spent training and working and sacrificing to be an actor, to be a martial artist, that has meaning. And that comes from somewhere. There's a reason I have chosen to dedicate my time to that. Just, yeah. There's a reason somebody would choose to dedicate their life to being a police officer, you know, and those have some deep-rooted some deep-rooted psychological moments that incited that path in someone's life. So that's the kind of stuff you bring to the character, and that I would bring to the character if I had a chance, just like the Kujikuri. I mean, that all of those ideas and that those creative suggestions that you make come from diving deep into what the character is, who he is. So what would he be doing? You know, would he just sitting around a campfire, eating some hot dogs and toasting some marshmallows? Not that kind of a situation. Yeah. So interestingly enough, I worked for John Ridley on a pilot he did in, this is a semi-funny story for you guys. Back when I was moonlighting as a stuntman and coordinator, I'm sorry, assistant coordinator. So I just finished a fight scene on Mortal Kombat with the fight scene that you see around the tree with Kim Do. And we're in the van, tired and ready to go home, long day, and some dude is behind me asking me questions about, oh, you know, you a martial artist and how long you've been done that and this and that. And it's clear to me that the dude is just geeking out on martial arts. And, you know, I don't want to hear it at this point. I'm tired about it. I don't care. You know, I don't care about the style and the form and the ninjutsu and the, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
I'm looking at the guy. I'm just like, yeah, you know, it's been doing it a long time. Just same old, you know, yeah. And then he said a couple of things. He just keeps talking to me.
Oh.
Things that were kind of funny and nice. And I laughed, and then I responded naturally. And then next thing you know, I'm like, hey, I'm Dan. And I turn around, and he goes, and he looks at me, and he smiles. And I'm like, and this is after John really had just finished writing 12 Years a Slave, and it won the Academy Award, right?
Yeah.
Did Academy Award, I think it did, right? For...
I believe.
Or was it Best Picture? Anyway, it was definitely nominated, and it was a pleasure to see him. And it was kind of funny because he knew exactly what he was doing. He was goading me. He was just needling me until I, because we knew each other.
Yeah.
So, did I answer your question? Because I went off on a tangent there.
Oh yeah. No. Definitely. Okay. Definitely. Yeah.
So I'm sure you get a lot of love from your fans who recognize you for your portrayals of Virgil
in... You're sorry that I get a lot of love from my fans? Is that what you said? You're sorry?
No, I'm not sorry.
What did you say then?
I'm sure you get a lot of love from your fans.
Say again.
I'm sure you get a lot of love from your fans.
Okay, I'm sure you get... Okay.
Yeah. So you obviously portrayed Virgil from Devil May Cry, and you're also Eric Myers in the Power Rangers. Tell us a bit about sort of what you're working on now as well.
Well, I just finished Blade of the 47 Ronin. And that was a lot of fun. The director was somebody I'd known for a long time, but this is the first film we worked together on. He's been in a lot of films himself. Great actor and amazing director. He was wonderful. And all of the actors on that movie, as it turned out, were wonderful to work with and great people. That's kind of rare when you just get along with everybody. Now, I had some issues here and there on some other fronts, and that's kind of normal, you know. A big group of people, it's always going to be difficult, but every single one of us got together, got along, and the stunt crew too. That was a treat. That was really a treat.
That's what I like to hear.
Yeah, I also finished work on this movie coming out called Saint Seiya. And I think I can say that. But that's all I can say. I can't say anything else about Saint Seiya, except that I worked on a movie, and the title is Saint Seiya. Something, something,
something. Oh, hey, it's something, eh, Chris?
It's directed by the executive producer of The Witcher, so I expect it to...
Oh!
Pretty interesting film to look at.
Well, certainly. Mm. You once said a number of years ago that before your role in Legacy, you were involved in a revamped Mortal Kombat game, playing the characters Nightwolf and Sub-Zero. Was this the Mortal Kombat HD Arcade Collection that was canceled?
Was it canceled when they went back and tried to do everything in HD, but to the model of the old game? Is that what we're talking about? Did that get canceled?
That's, yeah.
Well, I got paid for my work on it.
Yeah.
And yeah. Girls and I went out and dated each other for a little bit after that. That was fun.
Oh,
there you go.
So win-win for over here. But, I did. I played Nightwolf. I did Nightwolf, and I think I did some Sub-Zero stuff, but I think I mainly did Nightwolf, and I have a picture of me as Nightwolf back then, yeah. So they dressed us up in makeup and wardrobe, and we had to go in and match the timing and everything for the moves. So I had to match the exact poses. They would have the game play out, and then I have to go in and rematch that stuff so that I... in there so they could basically giving it a brand new skin, but they weren't changing any of the dynamics of how it worked, you know, the mechanics of it, which I thought at the time was, games have progressed so far now. I don't know if you, you know, that's like repackaging. It's, you know, taking it in a Ferrari and going, look, isn't that cool? It's got a-
Oh, man.
So it and that it ended up getting canned. It's too bad, though, because I enjoyed
it. Yeah. All right. To everybody watching on YouTube or Spotify right now, if something looks a little different at the moment, it is likely because these last few questions are being filmed several weeks later. Dan is joining us to add some additional footage. But unfortunately, Christopher isn't available to film due to some family health issues. With that being said, Dan, it is to my knowledge that the fight scene you filmed on Legacy with Ermac specifically actually plays a pretty important role for you with producers and such. Why don't you tell us a little bit about that, along with how important this character has been to you on a grand scale of things?
Well, to answer your first question, the footage is what I use when people ask to see if I'm capable of action. There are producers that want to know if you can fight and how well you can do your own stuff. And I think that the pace and the style of that action in that sequence is great and indicative of my skill level and satisfies anyone who was wondering if I could do any action. It is actually, I've come to realize just recently submitting it again as real footage for... REEL is what I mean to say, for whether or not, for what my action looks like and my skills are, I realize that I submit that piece a lot and that it's actually one of the pieces I'm more proud of to have worked on in my little stint as an action guy.
Little stint. Oh, that's incredible, man.
Yeah, and then, and I submitted that recently for, I'm up for a, or actually, I should say, I'd be considered for a series regular in an HBO show. We'll see what happens. And so they've asked.
Wow, congratulations. I hope so.
Footage. Yeah, thank you. And so they've asked for some action. It's an action show. So they've asked for some action footage. And I realized in submitting that, you know, this character is one of the more favorite characters of mine that I've had a chance to play in my career, Kenshi. Especially because of what Tantarun let me do with the tone of the character before he becomes blinded. He's very arrogant and I was going to use the word cocksure. which are fun characters to play. You know, he doesn't take the situation seriously, sure. Of course, until the crisis moment when he loses his eyes and that changes his life. Anyway, originally... I think I may have felt a little bit more indifferent about the character because it's just been a long time and you forget sometimes, you know. But recently I've come into the realization that this is one of my more favorite characters. And I think, you know, Mortal Kombat otakus and fans out there might appreciate that.
Oh, most certainly. Most certainly. So remind us, Dan... Did you happen to keep anything at all from the set upon your time working on Legacy 2?
I don't usually do that. I don't usually keep stuff from the set. I mean, usually, especially on lower budget shows like this, they have to return that stuff to keep their budget, their overall budget.
That's fair.
On some films, they buy the wardrobe and it's totally okay for the actress to come in and take the wardrobe at the end. Producers will do that as a gift to the actors, especially if there's something they like, so that it's not like it's unprecedented or it's out of the norm or it's, you know, shouldn't be done. I just didn't have to take anything from the show. I think I had, nothing. I didn't take anything with me except the experience. The experience was great. It was wonderful. I would have loved to have been given the sword, but I'm sure that sword cost a pretty penny to fabricate.
Yeah, no doubt. When the series was completed and you finished your first time viewing it, Were you satisfied with a lot of the special effects that they had implemented with your character, Dan?
I mean, you have to remember the time and the venue, right? And the scope of the project. It was meant to be a web series, and it was right as web series were being produced for the internet. It was pretty close to when the internet was starting to expand in terms of entertainment possibilities. And so this was an experimental investment by Warner Brothers. And as a result, I've just led myself away from the question. What was the question again?
Were you satisfied with all these special effects that they had?
Special effects. So when you think about it like that, the money that they had to spend on the special effects was not extensive. And considering that, I was happy with the special effects. I thought it was pretty well done, considering the budget that they had at the time and that this was a web series and experimental in nature in terms of what Warner Brothers was doing with the IP.
Very good.
I watch it now and I'm like, yeah, that's not bad. I mean, it's supposed to be magic. So, you know, I mean, nowadays, if it was a bigger budget film, you'd see real snakes coming out of Armak's robe. But I thought thought it worked just fine. It's magic, you know.
Very good. You've mentioned during Legacy, basically, you were unscathed. There were no injuries. But in terms of your entire career, did you ever have any serious accidents? And if so, which film was it on?
No. I mean, I've had some harrowing moments working a little bit as a stuntman. Maybe there was one moment in the film I did that's on Netflix called Battle Drone, where I'm fighting a bunch of these drones, humanoid drones. And there's a moment when I slam against the wall. The wall was only set dressing, and I was on a three-story, abandoned building. And just went through the aluminum set dressing and could have definitely fallen to my detriment. If I would have survived it, I would have definitely been paralyzed in some way or seriously maimed. So that's about as close as it came. But I didn't hit it quite hard. It just buckled a little bit, and then we realized, you know, that it might not be as structurally sound as we would have liked for where we were doing that piece of fight action. That can happen sometimes when we're moving pretty fast on some of these smaller films. So that would be about it. You know, the worst injury that I've been living with, I received because I was a little arrogant knucklehead. You know, right before I went off to do the first live, my live show, my first job in Los Angeles, my first official job in Los Angeles was a live show for the Power Rangers stunt show. And I played the Black Ranger. So I had just...
Yes.
I was screen testing for that role, and Johnny Bosch, I don't know if you know who he is, but he's the guy, character. He's the actor who got the character role, and then I ended up playing the live show version. So, not bad. But right before that, I had a rival match with, a friend of mine who was from a rival school in wrestling. And we were at a karate school training, and we discovered that we were both wrestlers for the rival schools at different eras, and we had a match, and I took him down 9 times in a row. It was to the takedown. I was good. I was a good wrestler. And he said to me, one more. And you never should take the bait for one more. And he got me, but at the moment it wasn't enough that I had beaten him 9 times in a row. I couldn't let him just have the last one. So I fought it, reversed it, didn't let him get the takedown, but in the process really damaged the meniscus in my right knee badly. And then the next day I had to go on tour and do this live action show. So I took like 8 Advil and bandaged it up really tight. And then over the years I recovered. I was young. I was 22 when that happened, 22, 23. But it is still an injury that can cause, that can remind me of what an arrogant fool I used to be. So that's about as, you know, aside from getting kicked in the head and punched in the head when I used to spar full contact and fight full contact, you know, I mean, those are bad injuries. getting kicked in the head or hit in the head is no light matter. So, I mean, that's all I have to report, you know.
Okay.
I'm usually pretty careful on set. I'm very careful when I'm on set, especially if it concerns myself. Interestingly that I say that, because I'll throw myself into some pretty tough spots just to get it done, just because I know I can get it done sometimes. When I'm coordinating and working in the shot. But I don't coordinate anymore. I'm retired from that. I'm retired from stunts. So I don't actually, there's a less probability that I'm going to be in that kind of situation again.
Okay. Now, looking at the long list of projects that you've worked on, what was your experience like working on a Star Wars project? Because I believe, if I'm not mistaken, you did stunts or motion capture for Star Wars Jedi Fallen Order. Is this accurate?
I did. I can't remember the amount of motion capture jobs I've worked. I know there was Battlefront, but that's not Star Wars. Was Battlefront Star Wars? Battlefront was Star Wars, right?
No, Star Wars Battlefront.
Yeah, that's right. Right? But there was also Battlefront, the game similar to Call of Duty, right? That was more of a soldier.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Anyway, so again, action supervising, which is pretty much stunt coordinating, and playing a character. My favorite moment was I got to play Han Solo. That was pretty awesome.
Oh, no way.
With the motion capture, and I did the whole scene, you know, which is playing the character. I had to embody the character of Han Solo physically. And then I think they went in and they put Harrison Ford's voice in there over the character. But it was a lot of fun to in some sense, actually be playing an iconic hero that I grew up with, you know, that was as cool as Star Wars. As Han Solo in Star Wars.
Yeah. I also understand you had the distinct pleasure to work with some of the biggest legends of all time, such as Jackie Chan and Jet Li. Could you tell our audiences more about that?
Did I work with Jet Li? I worked with Sammo Hung. And I worked with
Sammo Hung.
Yeah, I worked with Sammo Hung on Martial Law. Wow. Did a fight scene with Sammo Hung. And then I worked with Jackie Chan on two occasions. One was a shoot for GQ magazine, and I actually held him in a wire, and that was pretty cool. I was responsible for his safety and, you know, suspending him in the air. And then I did a PSA with him recently, a few years ago, where he came in and he did some fight choreography. And again, I was handling some of the wire work for those guys. So it was a pleasure to be a part of that team. My mentor was the person I trained with and learned some of the trade craft of wire rigging and wire choreography and fight choreography, was one of Jackie Chan's team members for many, many, many years. Doubled him in Rush Hour, you know, and Shanghai Noon.
Oh, you did?
Yeah. So I had, that was a little bit of a luck happening into that crew and getting a chance to train with them and develop my craft.
And before we go, Dan, besides Jet Mortal Lee, Kombat, like
your answer to Jet Li, I doubled him in a motion capture video game. I did some of his movements. That's
Was it a Rise of Honor or something like that?
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
Because they couldn't get him for all of the days, so when they had extra stuff to pick up, I would come in and do some of those action sequences and some of the stunts for that.
Okay. So, Dan, we are now going to jump to a little segment called
Final Round.
And so what we're going to do on this final round is we're going to ask you a number of questions to really dive in, try to get to know you a little more. So the first question is,
good luck.
What We're going to try. What was your very first job?
I worked at Pizza Hut when I was 16.
Oh.
Then the man
very good.
Tried to send me home one night because I talked back to him. But he was just wrong what he was asking and doing. And so I had something to say about it. And it was the only time I had actually talked back to anybody while I was working at that job. So the owner calls me to ask me what happened. And he said, Dan, you do such great work in here. You're quiet. You come in, you do the work, you do your work impeccably. And then you go home. What happened? I'm like, well, this happened. And I wasn't fired for it. And that was a lesson to me that do your job and do it really well. That's value. It's enough value that if you decide to stand up for something, people want to hear what you have to say because they value what you've given first, not in return for something first. You know, I wasn't just a 16-year-old kid that would slap the wet towel on those tables like you see when you go to a restaurant, you know, these days. 16-year-old kid busting the tables. I cleaned the tables so that when families sat down, they had a clean table. I replaced the towels. When I wash the dishes, I wash the dishes. You know, sometimes I go places and I look at the kids that are working and that ethic isn't there. And I get it. You just want to earn your bucks, save for your car, I was saving money to take no, I was too young then. Later on, I worked at a round table and I was saving money to take my prom date out. But to the my date took, they didn't know I was going to quit after a couple of months. The guy hired me and he said, I talked to your former employer over at Pizza Hut and he had nothing but great things to say to you. Why did you quit? You know, he wanted to know why I quit. And I had a goal in mind of how much money I needed to earn and that was enough for me. So anyway, a long story about fucking working at Pizza Hut.
Hey, I like it. No, very well said. What are some...
About, you know, taking away something from those experiences, not just slogging through everything that you do. And I mean, that's informed the way I work for the rest of my life. And thank my father for instilling that habit, ethic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What are some of your secret talents, Dan?
I don't have any secret talents, man. Everything I do, I've laid all out there in the open for everybody to... famine, hate, or love.
No, nothing that something most people don't know about you. Anything at all?
I could write. I think I can write. I don't know.
Yeah, on IMDb, it said you had some writing credits. Was that for Divergence?
I was a story created by me. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I like to do carpentry. I can't say I'm good at it. Decent at it. I would say I build bad furniture for a hobby.
What is your biggest pet peeve?
Well, people not caring enough to do something properly. Not caring enough.
Yeah.
You know, I think nowadays people are so concerned with being famous. And it's not, even now in my own career, my own goals are not to be famous. I'm just trying to get to a place where I'm earning a living doing what I know and what I enjoy.
Yeah.
I think people've got their eye on the brass ring without understanding what it takes to get there, right?
Mm-hmm.
I should say it's a better metaphor because the brass ring, all you have to do is reach out and grab it, right? But you're after, well, it takes a process and it takes patience and it takes work and dedication. And I despise people who come into the gym. There are some specialized gyms that I train at to work my skills and my craft. And I despise the people that come in and have conversations for 3/4 of the time they're there. Those are generally inevitably one of those people comes over and wants me to show them how to do something, which is stealing time from me. I consider that stealing.
Yeah.
When you're asking somebody to give you something for free and you haven't given anything up front, you're stealing somebody's time. And all of us have a very finite amount of time. So those things are important to me. And so when I see that, you know, I'm not saying that you can't enjoy yourself and have fun, you know, while you're training. There's a line at which it just becomes you're either serious or you're a fool.
Exactly. What is the number one thing that you are most proud of?
All-encompassing in the universe, what I'm proud of?
Yes.
I'm proud.
Yes.
I'm here, and I'm 48, and I'm still here. I can be proud of that.
Hey, good answer. Good answer.
Moments in my life, and I've survived them all, so I'm proud of that. I am proud that I was able to grow from self-reflection, and that means accepting failures and accepting my mistakes. And another, you could say, pet peeve of mine is that people are not willing enough to admit when they make a mistake and they do something wrong.
Yeah.
So those things have made me proud of where I've ended up. I've ended up today because of that kind of reflection.
Describe your strangest fan encounter.
Well, there's lots of those. quantify one as any more strange than the next. They're just different types of strange, right? I can't say what some of them are.
You just had a lot of them.
They're you know what? But nothing overly bizarre. There's just, you know, and part of that is that, you know, by the time I was really interacting with my fans, I was already a little bit older and I think a little bit more used to the industry and mature, and I could see the weirdness coming a mile away. So I'm just kind of good at sidestepping that before that becomes an issue. I think that some of the other actors I work with can get a little weird. Yeah. I think that a lot of times there are actors that I'll work with that'll just end up being much stranger than any of the fans you encounter. Because, again, it's a business of creatives, and sometimes part of your genius is also your madness. But I can share a little anecdote with you. When I used to do, before I worked on the show, before I got hired to work on the show as an actor for Power Rangers, I had done the live shows and appearances for corporate headquarters for a good part of 10 years.
Okay.
So for a while there, and I think you still see it every once in a while, when you see the Power Rangers appearing at some event on the weekend, signing and taking pictures, well, we were sent out from corporate headquarters in California, Burbank, all around the country and sometimes around the world to be official representatives. And so they hired us because we could flip and kick and we had a certain sense of decorum so that we didn't like try to throw a kick and accidentally kick some kid in the head. That could be a public relations.
Oops.
So over time, they'd sort of weeded us out to a super group of people that just sort of understood how to perform in these costumes and act and get along and be gracious and deal with fans that would come up and try to smack you around, you know, and anyway, that kind of stuff. So, but the thing that would happen over and over again is that mothers would come up and put their hand on my ass as we took pictures.
Oh, they would, huh? They would.
And one time I was in Saban's, I did an appearance at Saban's house. He invited us to stay for dinner. We took some pictures with him and his family, and then we took a picture with his maid, and his maid at the time reached down and grabbed, it was a nanny actually. She reached down and she grabbed me and the other guy's ass. Nobody could see it. And then I'm like, oh yeah, I'm familiar with that maneuver. Going on or reach down. Never had to reach around, but the reach down for sure. Yeah, that's what would happen to us.
Wow.
Wow.
Okay.
What's the best piece of advice you've ever been given?
Oh, follow your heart. Do what you love doing. Do what you love doing and the money will come. I don't think that's logical advice. But it was good advice for me. You know, I ended up doing this. A lot of good things have happened in my life, and a lot of good growth has happened for me in my life because of that bit of advice. The person that gave me that advice did not end up liking what I have gone on to do. That
Oh, okay.
Something completely different. But he knew enough And he actually couched it in these terms. He said, I know what I want to tell you to do, but I can't tell you to do that because that would be an unfair influence on what you should do, which is follow your heart. And he hated my choice. But it was good advice. It was good advice. I mean,
yeah.
My personal advice that I would give to somebody is, a man is what he does, not what he says he does. That's my motto. And I know that's one of your questions.
Yeah, beautifully stated.
Answer. And it's just, you know, don't be somebody who's talking and trying to sell themselves. Actually do it. Be able to do something. And that says a lot. You know, you have to do something. You have to do it. You have to put the time in to work your craft. Whatever it is. Whatever it is.
Yeah, walk the walk. Mm. What is your guilty pleasure?
Beer.
Oh, the truth is out.
Yeah, I'm a beer drinker.
What's your favorite brand?
All.
All.
All. Not just beer. Gin and I enjoy a good gin and tonic every once in a while, but I like a beer. You know, I like to have a beer after work hard in the day. There's nothing better than a beer. I had a beer with a lunch right before we got on here.
Ooh.
Anyway.
Can't go wrong.
Does that count as a guilty pleasure?
I think so.
Yeah.
And to end off here, what's the funniest thing that's ever happened to you?
My career.
Fair enough.
That's it.
That's amazing.
That's the truth.
Cool.
Excellent. Well, Dan, this has been absolutely fantastic. But before we end off, where can people find you on social media? Tell us.
I'm on Instagram, Dan_Southworth. The link for the Cameo is there. If there's anybody that's ever interested in ordering a Cameo, I'm on Cameo as well. And that's it. I'm not on any other type of social media at the moment. Okay. I give enough attention to Instagram and that's enough. Any more than that, and I'm not participating in my life anymore. I'm just showing it off.
Yeah, very well said.
Show off. So for me, Instagram is enough. I probably wouldn't be on Instagram except for the fact that it's kind of a thing that actors should have at least one social media. So because companies will ask you to help promote for marketing and stuff, it's not mandatory and I'm considering coming off, but it's taken a number of years just to work up to 50,000 followers, which is, again, a very modest amount of followers, not even that significant, but it's nice that 50,000 people have decided that they want to see what the hell I have to post. So I indulge them. I try to put stuff up that's entertaining. That's what I try to do. The Instagram is just an entertainment sort of thing. I just try to put some entertaining stuff on there. You won't see me trying to make any political statements or, you know, that's for me and myself and for when that's appropriate. I'm not a dude that thinks I'm going to sway 50,000 people to change the world.
Yeah.
You do that by living by example for people.
Absolutely.
So it's just meant to be entertaining. I think you will find it entertaining if you go on there. There's some goofy stuff on there. There's some fun stuff on there. When I'm doing a film, yeah, I'm required to post some stuff up there. So you'll see what the last film is I've done or show I've done every once in a while. And look out on Netflix for Blade of the 47 Ronin.
Oh, can't wait. Is there a release date? Sorry?
It's a late night. Have a little something to drink. Or
or whichever you do, yeah.
One of those. Enjoy it with a little enhancement. And then you'll dig the movie, man. Dude that likes to see 5-minute long action sequences, then okay, you're in your own kind of high. Simply turn on and tune in.
All right, very good. Well, Dan, we really, really appreciate your time, and good luck with all your future projects, and hope to talk to you again.
Look forward to it. Thank you very much for having me on, you guys. I enjoyed it.
Okay, my friends, and there we have it. We greatly hope to see Dan appear in the franchise once again, as it would be a real delight. We appreciate you taking the time to tune in today. Me and Christopher are utterly exhilarated for what's up ahead for Comedogu. We are pleased to inform everybody that we have a surprise for you. If not the next episode, we can assure you it will be coming very soon. Keep those eyes open, as you will not want to miss this. You know how it goes. Have fun, stay safe, and
stay flawless.